Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I am your host, Preston Schlankhofer, coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center deep within the Civil Defense Radio bunker. This episode, we go deep into the wilderness to learn about the mental toughness of extreme survival. Our guest this episode is Biko Wright. Some of you may recognize his name as a contestant on Season 8 of History Channel's Alone series, where he was a runner-up for the big prize. Biko is not only an expert outdoorsman and survivalist, but also an accomplished musician and singer. And it is my pleasure to welcome for the first time Biko Wright to Civil Defense Radio. Hello, Biko. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Preston.
Yes, I'm glad we finally got this far, because we've had some troubles getting you scheduled and all kinds of things going on. So I'm glad we finally got this going. But for those who don't know your name or don't recognize your name, can you give us a little background on who you are and what took you to this competition on History Channel?
Yeah, sure. I'm Biko Wright. I was born and raised in California, Southern California, and I've lived in the Pacific Northwest for the last 5 years. I grew up with a father who was in law enforcement and the military, and he was a avid hunter, outdoorsman, and he basically just imprinted that kind of love of the wilderness on me, and it's what I love to do in my spare time. Aside from that, you know, I'm a musician, and it's more of a passion than a money making thing for me. I also have done construction to make a living for most of my life.
Well, that's pretty cool. What kind of music do you play?
I dabble in all types of music, but my heart is mainly in metal music and folk music, and so I have a band and both of those genres.
So you have two separate bands?
Yeah. One of the bands is called Sirion, that's the metal band, and then I have a folk band called Indelos.
So what kind of things did you learn as a young man growing up with your father that prepared you for this competition that you were in on the Alone series?
Well, growing up, we did a lot of backpacking, camping, fishing, hunting. General outdoors adventures were common in our family. And my dad also liked to take me and my brother out and do training with us. Anything from, you know, wilderness first aid, training with firearms, archery, that kind of thing, you know, as well as wilderness survival. And, you know, my dad was always stressing the importance of us being prepared for a survival situation, you know, with all the things we were always doing. My brother was a, you know, big wave surfer and a spear fisherman and stuff. And both of us were out in the elements a lot, and you know, snowboarding, that kind of stuff. So it was always just a thing that he just wanted us to be prepared should something bad happen, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of the theme of this show and what Civil Defense Radio is all about. So how did you get to become a contestant in the show?
Well, just like anyone else who watches it, you know, I was watching the season before mine, and or it might have been the one prior to that one, but I had applied once before and didn't think of anything of it, you know, never heard anything back. And I was watching the show one afternoon with my lady, and, you know, I started talking about, man, it'd be so cool to try out for this, you know, and get on there. And she was like, why don't you try again? And so I did. I applied by sending an email and a picture explaining who I am and my skills and personality and all that, you know. And I got an email back, which turned into a call, which turned into a video interview. And then all of a sudden, I was making videos to send to the casting people, demonstrating my skills. Then they cut that into about a 1.5, 2 minute long reel, which they send to the History Channel. And from those people that get to send in videos, History Channel picks 24 of them. I believe it was 24. And that group of 24 goes to what they call survival boot camp. Since it was the first year of the pandemic, we didn't get to actually go to our in-person survival boot camp. And so they kind of made it an online thing, you know, doing it through Zoom and other programs like that, where you can video that and we could still demonstrate the skills in our backyards and that kind of stuff, you know, and have go through some tests and bunch of interviews and all that. And then from that group, they pick 12 people. Two of them are alternates, which are there in case somebody drops out or something happens, that they have another person lined up ready to go in. And those alternates go with you all the way until you're at orientation camp and actually stay for a week after, just to make sure that they don't need to be switched out with anyone. And so that's kind of the short of the whole process. And it took a couple months from me writing that email to me being dropped out there.
Well, that's pretty good. So you knew what the scenario was before getting there, didn't you, or no?
Yeah. So basically, as soon as you're picked to be on the show, they kind of let you know where you're going to be going. But of course, during that time building up to where you're going to get dropped off, the rules are changing. You know, they're finding out different regulations we're going to have to be under. They're negotiating to get us, you know, maybe a little extra permissions here and there if they can. And so it's kind of like things were changing on the daily, and you know, you might have this whole plan in your head, but then all of a sudden you find out, you know, oh, well, I'm not allowed to do that. So between it being a show versus a real survival situation, you know?
Oh, yeah. So that all that changing had to have had some effect on your mental preparedness, didn't it?
Oh, it definitely did, you know, because you do everything you can to try and be prepared for it. And then you get thrown these curveballs like that, and all of a sudden, you know, what you had lined up as a suitable plan is now, you know, you got to rethink it all. And that's very much what the mental aspect is about, is adapting to those changes and trying to make it work still, you know, and not letting it run you into the ground.
Yeah. So you were out there. Where were you at exactly? You were out in British Columbia or where?
Yeah. So we were in British Columbia, in the Chilcotin mountain ranges, which is kind of central British Columbia, I suppose.
Okay.
The Montane Corridella, I think, is the scientific name for the region. But yeah, it was like at a higher elevation around a lake, big peaks all around, you know. I think we were roughly at about 4,000 feet elevation, with some elevations climbing to 6,500.
Wow, quite a variety. So can you describe for us the process that you went through to mentally prepare for this thing? And then we'll get into some of the steps that you went through once you got to your base camp that you had to set up. But let's hear about your mental prep first.
Okay. Yeah. The mental prep is huge, you know, and that's something that I have observed on previous seasons of the show as well. You know, a guy can go out there with all the tools in the world and all the know-how, and you know, it won't do a whole lot for you if your mind isn't trained for the suck, you know.
Yeah,
I've seen a bunch of times on the show where it just, you know, all comes crumbling down because something didn't work out or something took a turn for the worse, you know. And I've seen all these people on there fall to mental stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. It's arguably the hardest part about being isolated and being on your own out there. So yeah, I knew that was going to be a huge issue, and I worked to try to prepare myself for that. And I think a big part of it is just having a commitment to live and to put one foot in front of the other. Having a positive mental attitude greatly increases your chances of survival. You know, if you get down in the dumps and you let that take root, then that's, you know, that's going to lead to more bad decisions and mistakes that are ultimately can cost you your livelihood or your life, you know.
Yeah.
So some of the things I did was, you know, I worked on meditation with my brother. You know, he's real big into that stuff. And he helped me work on some of the meditation and that kind of thing. You know, I'm not like a yoga guy or any of that stuff, but he showed me some of that stuff. And I found that it was definitely helpful being able to, you know, take a step back and be like, okay, that happened. It sucked. I'm still alive. It's over. Let's move on, you know?
Mm-hmm. So can you go into some of the things that you did to prepare your base camp once you got situated or got left in the place that you were going to be? How did you figure out where you wanted to build your hooch, and what was the process of doing that? Because that is one of the most important aspects of survival is shelter. That's one of the first things you want to do, right?
Absolutely. For me, it's shelter, water, then food, you know? And from that, it's, you know, defenses and planning ahead, that kind of thing, for something bad to happen.
Right.
But yeah, so when I first got there, you know, they drop you off on the shore of your spot, you know, which all the spots are drawn at random.
Mm.
Some people get great spots and some people get crap spots, you know? And when I got there, I was thinking, man, my spot is not what I was hoping for, you know? I had steep hillside and just the thickest forest you can imagine. And the only thing penetrating through this thick forest that went all the way to the shoreline is a grizzly bear trail where the tracks are so worn in from year after year of grizzlies using them that they had these like 6-inch down submerged steps from where these bears had walked year after year. You know what I mean?
Mm.
And I'm like, cool, great. You know, I see there's lots of grizzly sign. There's thick forest. So I'm just going to go ahead on up that trail and see what they can find. And, you know, after doing a little bit of recon and checking out my immediate area, seeing what kind of plants I had, what my firewood supplies look like, you know, because you want to be close to your food sources, your fuel for the fire. You want to make sure you have all that stuff and you don't have to commute long distances for it, right?
And water, yeah. You got to have water nearby as well.
Of course, yeah. And so I wanted to be close enough to the lake shore that I didn't have to go on a big commute or go down a steep hill or anything to get water, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to make sure I had firewood and shelter building stuff available. So After searching my area, I found the flattest location in my area and also the only part that got a good bit of sunlight. And sunlight's important in those dark forests because, man, you don't get that vitamin D, you start getting depressed, you know, and that sends you spiraling down into those dark thoughts, you know, and
right,
and telling yourself you can't do it, that kind of thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, having a spot with some that got a couple hours of sunlight in the morning was important for me. And also it had, you know, it had the plants nearby, it had the lake, you know, just a short walk down to get water. So I decided that this was my best option to build a spot. Obviously for this kind of thing, you know, you're trying to set up for long term. So that first night you're really working with something super basic. So all the participants are supplied with a tarp to protect the camera gear, and you're allowed to utilize that tarp in your shelter as long as the camera gear lives in your shelter, right? So basically, you know, I, after kind of going through a little bit of drop shock, which is a term I think a contestant on season 6 coined, and, you know, you go through a little bit of shock as the you realize that you're alone and it's finally started after all these months of preparation leading up to it. And you know, for that I kind of had to sit and think it through, meditate a little bit, kind of get my head in the game. Next thing I was doing, I was throwing up a tarp shelter for the night, basically just some paracord strung between two trees and a tarp over that, with weights on either end, you know, tied off to be kind of an A-frame tent. Then the end that my head was going to be on, I put a bunch of branches like boughs and pieces of bark, wood debris that was laying around, you know, just to cover the side that my head was going to be on. Just a little comfort, you know, so you have more so just one opening to worry about. And, you know, once I had that shelter up for the night, I went and collected some more boughs to make a little bed, threw some moss on top of that, so I was, you know, not just directly on the ground.
Yeah.
And then next thing I was doing, I was getting a fire and getting some water boiled. You know, the spot we were at had really pure water, but, you know, it, $500,000 on the line, I wasn't trying to risk that. So I boiled all my water out there, even though people said it was clean enough to drink, probably.
So the environment, it was probably got some rain there, but you didn't have to worry about any snow, right?
Not yet. We did have snow later on. That happened maybe almost a month in is when we first got snow. But yeah, I got hunkered down for that first day. You know, the weather looked all right. We had some wildfire smoke that had blown into the area, so it was kind of smoky. But that night we got a crazy electrical storm and a bunch of rain, thunderstorm, lightning all night long. So I thought that was kind of a fitting first night, you know, get you all loosened up and ready for the rest of the time out there with a nice storm, you know.
Yeah, nice welcome to the wilderness, huh?
Yeah.
Now, with your experience of what you've gone through and the preparation that you made, would you recommend just the average person to plan on living out in the woods if something bad happens?
You know, I think it's pretty tough to just go out there without any kind of training, you know. I know there's been instances where people did that and managed to survive or they got lost and you know, they still pulled through. But for the most part, going into a situation like that without some kind of training and know-how and preparation, more times than not, ends in death by exposure, starvation, dehydration.
Yeah.
That kind of thing, you know.
Yeah, and dehydration is a killer. It really is. It's probably more so than lack of food.
Definitely.
Just People, a lot of times, especially out in the wilderness like that, if you're not near a water source, you're going to dehydrate pretty quickly, especially if you're working hard to build a shelter and you know, do everything that's required of building a shelter and setting up a camp. If you don't have enough water, you're gonna be in a depressed state for quite a while till you can get that remedied.
Absolutely, man. And you know, you got about 3 days without water.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, the food, you can go, what, 3 weeks?
Yeah, but 3 days without water, that going into the later part of the second day, you're already sluggish and body ache and things like that. So it's not a good environment. You're not operating at full capacity those full 3 days.
No, definitely not. And you know, the food thing, like it also is super important to be able to eat enough to get the work done that you need, but it ain't nearly the same as not having water. You know, I could go a week without food, not the same with water.
Yeah. Yeah. What was the biggest challenge that you faced once you were out there in the wilderness? What was the biggest challenge? And, you know, maybe a couple smaller ones that you faced.
Well, I'd say one of the biggest challenges was dealing with the hunger for me, just because I had a hard time putting enough food on the table out there. You know, we had some pretty tough regulations we had to follow that were not ideal, such as, you know, we weren't on the lake that they had chose to film on. We weren't allowed to use bait on that lake. It had a ban, you know, lures only, basically. And obviously, we weren't allowed to bring a tackle box full of lures, you know what I mean?
Mm.
So that was a real rough one. It was hard to put meat on the table. I ended up falling back a lot on my wild plant knowledge, and that's what kept me going for the majority of the time out there. I had things like, you know, I had tons of squirrels in my location, like probably hundreds of red squirrels, and weren't allowed to trap or hunt them.
Hmm.
So I had all this potential food running around that I couldn't harvest, you know, and that was really frustrating.
Wow.
And difficult to mentally overcome that, you know, and keep following the rules and stuff.
Hmm. Yeah, that would be, see, rules like that are not around when the crap hits the fan and you have to survive. So, you know, a lot of the rules go out the window. And, you know, still, I've ran into people and talked to them about, you know, preparedness and stuff. And you know, what do they have planned? And they say, well, I'm going to the mountains. And it's usually somebody that doesn't look very fit. And, you know, they're thinking that they're going to go to the mountains and survive. I go, well, you know, do you think the people who live in the mountains are going to want to see you in their neighborhood?
Right.
I don't know. Probably not. But, you know, I get that. I've had that response a lot that, oh, I'm going to the mountains. Well, so is everybody else, it seems like.
Yeah, I've heard that a lot too. And, you know, I think something that people don't really realize in that situation is that, yeah, like, for one thing, so is everybody else. You know, depending on what type of scenario you're in, you're going to run into other potentially dangerous humans, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's the reason people want to run to the mountains in the first place is to avoid other humans, because really that's going to be, you know, it's going to be a big threat in different scenarios. And, you know, cities are going to get out of control. There's going to be, I mean, let's just say hypothetically, natural disaster, invasion, whatever it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
These cities are going to be a place you don't want to be.
Yeah.
So I get why, you know, that's their go-to thought process. They want to avoid running into those other people and the bad apples that might be laying traps for people out there and stuff. But when it comes down to it, if you don't know what you're doing, the wilderness is going to be just as dangerous of a place for you.
Yeah. Yeah. If not more so.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if you're not trained, skilled in wilderness survival, it's going to be very rough. And there's, you know, there's only one Grizzly Adams, and he was on TV. There's, you know, I'm sure you would have wanted to have at least a dozen people in your base camp with you to help with the chores and improving the shelter and hunting and fishing and doing all that stuff. It would have made it a lot nicer, wouldn't it?
Oh, definitely.
You'd still be out there.
Thought about, man, it'd be great if I had a few good friends here with me.
Yeah. No, it's rough. It's rough out there. You know, I've done a little bit of excursions out in the wilderness, but nothing like you did on that show. My wife and I, we watched, and you know, the guy who won, he was almost there. If you would have lasted another day or two, you would have had it. And
It weighs on me for sure.
but you don't know. You didn't. You had no way of knowing. But you know, you hit the wall, and you know, more power to you. I mean, you did what a lot of people wish they could do but can't. You know, I would not try that. You know, so my hat's off to you for what you went through and what you endured, because that is how many days was it? I can't remember.
I tapped out on the 73rd day, so
73rd day. So almost 3 months. So
yeah.
I mean, that's a good long time, man. We had a grid down here for 3 days of, you know, with ice and snow here in Virginia, and people were, you know, frustrated and ticked off because of that. I can't even imagine being out in the wilderness with these people and for 76 days.
Yeah, it's something that if you let the little things really get to you, it'll just start dismantling everything you're trying to do out there, you know?
So the what was your biggest takeaway? What did you learn from your experience out there? What was it that you will carry with you and teach to your children?
I learned, for one, that I had a lot more strength in me than I knew. Going out on the show, I really didn't know how long I could last. I've never had the opportunity to go out into the wilderness much longer than a week or so, with work and society and all that, So this was kind of a chance to really see what I could do. And just I found that I was way stronger mentally than I thought I was. And I learned that you can really, carve a living out there if you stay committed and stay on top of it, being able to dismantle those dark thoughts and the and extreme situations, when they come in and they try to make you second guess yourself or worry too much, you fall down the rabbit hole and of what ifs, and then that's that, Hard to climb out of that. So yeah, I would say that's one of the main things I learned is just being able to overcome those mental hurdles and push through it to get you where you want to be. And I'm hoping to be able to apply that more to my life,
So what kind of opportunities have you had since the show, professionally, as far as, you know, survival, speaking engagements and things like that? Have you had any?
Not as much as I kind of hoped for, but part of that is I had two new baby girls born. They just turned one this month, so it's been a it's been a quite a learning curve getting through that first year of parenting with twin daughters. And I think I have done several podcasts. I've had some opportunities to teach remotely, and I'm hoping to do some more in the future. I'm hoping to get some workshops going where I can take people out for, a couple days and teach them stuff, as well as at some of the primitive skills gatherings and stuff.
Great. Well, hopefully this show will reach some people who want to enlist your services.
Great.
Is there anything else that you want to get across to our friends out there who are listening to us before we have to pull the plug?
Yeah, try not to let your mind crumble when something's not going as planned. And being positive and keeping your mind on target, having a routine that you do every day. That's the kind of stuff that can really help you get through it.
That's wise. I like that. So we're going to have all of your links for various social media that you have in the show notes. Some platforms don't show all the links. So if you're wanting to see those links, then check out our website at civildefenseradio.com, and you will find the whole entire list of things that we'll have on there. I noticed this recently that a couple of the podcast apps, they only allow so much information. So we got to make sure that everybody understands that you have to go to our website to get all of the information. So that's, again, civildefenseradio.com. So it was my pleasure having you on the show. And I look forward to maybe getting together with you and your father on some things and talking on air about that, because you guys have some interesting things that you guys have done as well together. So that looks like something we can do in the future.
Yeah, that'd be great. He's got so much knowledge and stuff to share, for sure.
Yes. All right, so that'll have to be the last word. The civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation you may find yourself in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager, and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio, Telegram at Civil Defense Radio Channel, and MeWe at Civil Defense Radio. And most of the items that we post are important information about the many threats we see to our safety and security as a nation. Some of them are political, but you have to understand that politics is also a threat. Like right now, we've got an administration that is rattling sabers with Russia, and we didn't have to worry about that just a year and a half ago. So politicians are also a huge threat, because they think about one thing, power. They don't think about you and me. So I wish to thank our guest, Biko Wright, again for being on the show. And I'd like to thank you, our friends and listeners out there who are with us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.